How many of you have ever been to the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo and saw the mule pulls? Got any hands out here? Got one, Debbie, a few? You know what I'm talking about. They only have them on a certain Saturday, I think, when they do those things. You see those mules, they put a, it's like an iron sled, they call it, with weights on it. They can change the weights on them. And those mules either come out single, or they sometimes work in pairs. And they'll come out there, and they have so long to pull it and see how far they can pull it. And then they're judged by how far they can pull that certain weight. And so these teams are matched up. You got your heavyweight, the middle, and then you got the small mules. But anyhow, those mules, if you, those of you have been there, I mean, you just, your heart goes out to them. They will pull, they'll get down almost on their bellies pulling those sleds. I mean, that's that, you know, and they're not hurting themselves, but they're just giving it all they got. Kind of reminds me of weightlifting days. We get on up to the heavier weights, and you grab that bar and you start to go up on it. You think, can I do this or not? And you kind of, it's a mind thing, and I'm sure those mules are having to do a similar thing. Well, you know, if you hook those mules up to a wagon, man, they'll go to town. But if you put one mule in the front and one in the back and let them start pulling against each other, what's going to happen? Something's going to tear. Something's going to break sooner or later, because they're pulling pretty strong and hard. Either the wagon sooner or later, or the hitching, something's going to rip and tear on that situation. The wagon's going to be torn apart, and this is the way hope and zeal function. Hope and zeal are strong desires that they must be pulling in the same direction. They pull in the same direction, and it's a very, very strong pull then. Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. We have been studying for past weeks now, gone into months, on being more zealous. We've been building a fire. Different lessons. We've chunked another chunk on the fire, get the fire bigger and bigger. And we're getting all that, been working with their being zealous and our hope for heaven are together. And they have to be together always. And we got to work on that. And it's a daily job on trying to do that. Otherwise, your life may be wrecked because you don't have those pulling together, a hope and being zealous. You may have great hope, but you're not very zealous. You don't do anything. You don't try to motivate yourself. You don't try to teach others and so forth. So your hope and zeal can propel you towards a greater passion and a progress of trying to do better in your life for Jesus Christ. Consider 1 John 3:3. And everyone who has this hope fixed on him purifies himself just as he is pure. You know, men, even if you're not married, you have a girlfriend, men buy diamond engagement rings, or they buy rings for their girlfriends, and they hope on the wedding rings, engagement rings, they hope they will say yes. And I'm not into watching the bachelor shows and all that type of stuff, where at the end they finally propose, and they may say no to them, you know, and it's all on television and all that bit. I just wonder how much of that is scripted. That's just me, and I'll get off on that. But But they hope to say yes. Patience. Patients will take experimental treatments because they hope to find a cure, or they hope to be out of chronic pain day to day. So think about this. What kind of actions have you taken based on your hope for a favorable future with God? Because you have to take action. Okay? Just some thoughts here. You already know your zeal should be focused on God. So it's not surprising that Paul, John, and Peter all gave the same command about where to place your hope. You are to fix your hope entirely on God. This is profitable for Christians in every circumstance. Now, you got a handout. You can just kind of fill that handout in as we go here this evening. 1 Timothy 4 and 10. For it is for this we labor and strive, because we have fixed our hope on the living God, who is the Savior of all men, especially of believers. You got to labor. For this we labor. Okay? 1 Timothy 5 and 5. Now she who is a widow indeed and who has been left alone has fixed her hope on God and continues in interest and prayers night and day. That's when you're distressed in older age. And that can also apply to somebody that's a lot of stress on things and they're younger. 1 Timothy 6 and 17, instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on this uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Okay? That's when you're surrounded by riches. And reality here in America, everybody's really rich. When you compare even our poorest Americans to other countries, third world countries, and I see John shaking his head because he's seen some of that, we're still very rich, okay? And something somebody doesn't really quite understand, I think, at times. Okay. 1 John 3 and 3, and everyone who has this hope fixed on him purifies himself just as he is pure, looking for his return. 1 Peter 1 13, therefore prepare your minds for action, keep sober in spirit, fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Okay? Action. Preparing for action. In his first epistle, you know, Peter urged Christians to lock their hope on an inheritance, which is imperishable and undefiled and will not fade away, reserved in heaven for you who are protected by the power of God. That's over in 1 Peter 4, 1 through 4, 1 Peter 1, 4 through 5. So we're going to talk about some of this this evening, about from Peter, especially starting here at Peter 1 and 13. 1 Peter 1 and 13. Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Powerful, really powerful. And something that we all can do, but we've got to stay fixed You know, that's the whole thing. We got to prepare our minds. How are we going to prepare our minds? Y'all know this. Study. Read the scripture. Study. It's right there for us. We just got to do the study. And I've heard people say, well, I don't know how to study. Well, if you start reading, that's the main thing to start off with. And then if you want to go a little bit further, you can start looking on the side. Most Bibles have these little sidebars and with a verse, and then they have other scriptures, other verses you can go to about different words and so forth. And I think most people in here understand, realize that. And then you can go even further in depth and get into some of these Bible encyclopedias and work with those. So there's a lot of ways that we can prepare our minds for action. But we got to keep sober in spirit. Then we got to fix our hope completely on the grace to be brought to us. Peter first addressed the problem of becoming too focused on the present and losing sight of the future. This phrase literally says, gird up the loins of your mind. And I think we've talked about, at times preachers have talked about, the girding up the loins means to tuck. They wore these longer type of robes in that day and time. And if they're going to do some heavy manual labor, they'd pick up the, I'm going to call it the dress tail, and they'd tuck it in their belt around so they wouldn't get tripped up on that while they're doing heavier type manual labor. So you're going to tuck your lower edges of the tunic into the belt because you're getting in preparation for a battle or other divine demanding action. How would we think about that nowadays? I might turn on your brain. Okay? Turn on our brain. We gotta get ourselves ready. So to do that, we gotta turn our brain on. We gotta get focused on reading, studying the scripture, and keep our brain turned on. Peter's call to action emphasizes the need for sharp and alert thinking. When you prepare your mind, it becomes obvious that your hopes should be fixed above. Whether where neither moth nor rust destroys, and whether thieves do not break in or steal. So we're in Matthew 6 and 20. Ever get ready to start really studying something? Bring back all that time you had to study for a test. And there's sometimes you can sit there and you got all your material, or you're getting ready for a Bible class that you're going to be teaching, whichever. And you sit there and you look at it and you look at it, and you just cannot get your brain to calm down. You're thinking about this and that and something else that may have happened during the day. You can't get your mind fixed on what you need to study. Now, I was taught going way back through college, best thing to do is get up. We'll take a break. Get away from it. 10 minutes, 15, then you come back and you sit down again. And many times, just that little break will kind of reset your mind. You get more prepared for it. But when your mind is set and ready, boy, you can have golden fingers like Don. I always pick on Don about his golden fingers because on that keyboard, because he does a lot of writing and stuff. And all of a sudden, things just come to you. And I know any men in here preparing for a Bible class, or the ladies on teaching the younger ones, I know that's happened to you. And you sit down and just thoughts just start coming to you and you just crank it out. And then there's other times you sit there for 20, 30 minutes and just, you're just blank. And it just happens. It just happens that way. So we gotta try to stay away from the distractions of life or the fiery trials that we face, to see that the treasure of heaven is worth any sacrifice you may have to make. Okay, we gotta stay on that straight and narrow trail. Peter deals with thinking too much about today and too much about tomorrow. Do you think too much about one or the other? Anybody want to dare answer that one? I kind of doubt they see any hands on that one. But if so, has this imbalanced thinking led you into any mistakes? Or you made some definitely wrong decisions? How would you describe the right balance between hoping in today's blessings and tomorrow's promises? Any thoughts on that? How would you describe the right balance between hoping in today's blessings and in tomorrow's promises? Okay? And that can be a tough question right there. That's very correct. And that's something that we can so easily forget. It's always God's will, regardless, on things. And that's one of the toughies on prayer. Because a lot of times during stress in a person's life, you know, they'll pray to God for help and so forth during this, but they kind of forget that the answer may be no, because He knows it needs to be no for you. And people have a hard time accepting that, okay? Especially. And I know right now, everybody in here knows right now, the families impacted by the Guadalupe flood out there. There are a lot of people praying for a good outcome, but time is now gone to, they know. And it's really, really hard to cope with that type of situation. And it's even harder for somebody who does not have God in their life, okay? Very hard for that. So a lot of that going on. Peter then addressed the problem of focusing too much on the future. Although heaven will be wonderful, you still have duties to perform while on earth. Okay? Well, can't just stop, okay? I'm a child of God. I believe. I know I'm going to go to heaven. I'm doing everything right. And then you just lay up on the sofa and you don't do anything. I mean, come on, there's other things we got to do throughout our life to get there, okay? So we got to put everything in a little bit of perspective here. Don't be so intoxicated by the hope that you become foolish or neglectful of things that need to be done and trying to teach others. There's many, we can fill those slots in there, all kind of different things. When writing to the Thessalonian Christians, Paul complimented their zeal for the return of Jesus, but also instructed them not to quit working. We find that over in, let's see here. But we urge you, brethren, to excel still more and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend your own business and work with your hands just as we commanded you, so that you will behave properly towards outsiders and not be in any need. Sober-minded Christians will not turn back to the lust of the flesh, but will continue to live holy lives. And that's something we all got to strive at doing and not get distracted, because the evil one devil, Satan, whatever name you want to put on him, the dark one, is out there. He's lurking. And he knows our weaknesses. He knows how to distract us so easily on different things. Sometimes it may be a different broken foot that causes you a little distraction, a lot of pain, and you have to hop along and all that stuff for a while. But you got to still keep your hope on things, even though you may have bodily aches and pains at times. And anybody that's getting a little years on them understands the bodily aches and pains. Let's see here. This demonstration of hope is patiently working. 1 Peter 2:18. Let's see here. Two 18 through 25. Servants, be subject to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are harsh. For this finds favor, if for the sake of conscience towards God a person endures grief when suffering unjustly. For what credit is there if, when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? But if when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. Eagerly waiting. And then joyfully watching over Romans 5:2. Eagerly waiting could be, we can find some examples over in Romans 8:25 and 1 Corinthians 1:7. A sober spirit will help you place your hope in heaven where it belongs, while still fulfilling your responsibilities in this life. Do we get distracted? Yeah, we do. We all do. And it's just one of those type of things, as soon as you catch yourself being distracted, get back on track as fast as you can. And that's all part of it on that. Get back on track. By God's grace, Christians have an eternal inheritance above. Your faithful and reliable Father can be trusted to reward all those. Notice what I'm saying. All those who diligently seek Him. It's over in Hebrews 11:6. He promises victory over sin, victory over death, victory over sadness, victory over pain. Okay? Revelation 21:4. He promises those to us. But we have to do our part. We got to stay on the straight and narrow and keep following Him the best we can. The fulfillment of God's promise is certain. It is so near that Peter writes the end of verse 13 in the present tenses and not the future. Brethren, heaven is rapidly approaching. We may not realize it. You know, when you're, I'm going to call them a youngster, just getting out of high school, in college, I can remember those days. You know, all of us older people can remember those young days. You still got to keep your mind straight on the path. And when you get on up older, and I think everybody that's older in here realizes we can look back and realize time has flown. There's a lot of things happen each year. We got day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year, and all of a sudden 50, 60, 70 years are gone. But our mind is all wrapped up in our soul, and it's going to go on. We'll still remember all that. And we know that from the rich man and and the poor man's story. The time we spend here is like a drop in the bucket to eternity to God. That's the reason why it's so important for us to stay on the straight and narrow. Okay? Every once in a while, I'll ask somebody in the office, penny for your thoughts. Silence, usually. Okay. Sometimes a person will give me, all of a sudden I know, because I'm been asking questions, and I can tell they're way off in a never and ever land type thing, thinking. And when I ask them that, throw that out, the penny for your thoughts, all of a sudden it's like they come clean. It's like it's confession time. They start telling all this stuff. Most of the time it's, I don't want to hear all that stuff, but they need to talk. But a penny for your thoughts. The Margie probably didn't remember doing this to me. And this happened here not long ago when we do my last renewal. We drive along, we don't listen to radios. We don't listen to, we just don't do all that silence, watching the road, seeing this and that. Did you see that house? Did you see that? You know, kind of back and forth. But every once in a while, I'll throw that thought out to her. Penny for your thoughts. You know what she said? You know what she said? And she probably don't even remember saying it. No. Well, no, she don't give her any ideas. But she threw out something that caught me, and something we probably should all say, heaven. One word, heaven. You know, think about that a little bit. I mean, a penny for your thoughts. And the person responds, heaven? Okay? If anybody's ever been kidnapped by me and Margie and so forth, you get in the vehicle and I may ask, okay, where are we going? Silence. Okay, where are we going? Silence. Well, from that point on, no telling where they will end up at. Okay, or what we will end up eating. That's a big thing. Okay, where are we going to eat at? It's like, almost like a game. Margie's trying to ask me before I ask her, type thing. Because we both want to please the other one. Well, you pick. It doesn't matter to me. And it doesn't matter to me, okay? I just have I'm not in favor about eating quiche, but other than that, I'll eat about anything else, okay? But why is that? We cannot be indecisive when we start thinking about heaven, okay? Somebody the other day was talking about all the Guadalupe thing and made the comment about the, I wonder how many people that were there for their vacation stuff for the 4th of July had actually been thinking anything about God at all. They were out there having a lot of fun. Now, some of those at church camps, yeah, they probably had been type stuff. But otherwise, they wasn't really thinking about God. Just give you a thought and ask people sometimes on things. What do they think? What are they thinking? Primary hope is still summed up in that one little word, heaven. Heaven. We all want to go there. But we've got to have that hope going. We've got to have that stamina to keep us on that trail, that right trail. How real is heaven to you? Peter wanted Christians to look up from the ordinary and see the incredible day that is coming with eyes of faith. Every zealous Christian needs to live with the conviction that heaven is just around the corner. Is there a blessing with the Guadalupe situation? Y'all probably thinking, Zerubbabel, your thinking's weird. Is there a blessing from all that? Yeah. But you know what? Those children who are not of age, that didn't make it, they got a straight shot to heaven. We're told that. There's a blessing there. Hard on a family. Believe me, I understand. Hard on a family. But that is a blessing in that. Because we don't know, but God may have known what they was going to have to go through if they had lived on. Which might have not been too good. We don't know those things. But that's a blessing. Strange, that may sound strange, but it's a reality of things. Debbie, did you want to say something? Well, I thought you had your finger up. Or... Oh. Okay. You don't. Everybody wants to sit on their hands when they come to my class. Okay. That's all right. How real is heaven to you? Peter wanted the Christians to look up from the ordinary and see the incredible day that is coming with the eyes of faith. We've got to have that faith. Every zealous Christian needs to live with the conviction that heaven is around that corner. And it is. It is. We just don't know. Peter began his walk with Christ, making plenty of mistakes. But with the Lord's guidance, he grew into a mature and passionate disciple. The steps Jesus guided Peter in producing lifelong zeal, and they are now doing the same for you. Continue to draw closer to God. Fuel your character. Keep throwing those logs on the fire. And purify your environment, and your zeal will last a lifetime and beyond. From today and into eternity, may your zeal shine brightly for the Lord. But as for us, we will bless the Lord from this time forth and forever. Praise the Lord. Psalms 115:18. Questions? Make it easy. Any questions for me? Normally I don't have, I've run out of time, and tonight I had just a couple minutes to spare. So anybody got a burning question for me? Now we've been going now for, I've lost track how many months. I know we're past 6 months now, but and I'm sure y'all are getting pretty tired of me, but we've pretty well beat up being a zealous Christian. I hope and pray that everybody's gotten something, maybe one thing out of all these months that you can apply to your life and help you be a better Christian. And I encourage everybody to keep it up, because it rubs off. When you have that zealous attitude, other people see that and it rubs off on them. There's no doubt about that. Just one of those type of deals, for sure here.